I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
Scandell's long pass out of the money. Carter driving. He shoots his hooker. He scores. Boyle center. Granlund scores. His 12th career shutout. His fourth of this season. And a huge reason in why the Wild have turned things around.
And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The Wild look, according to Pat Foley of the NBC Sports Network, the Wild have turned things around. The On the Ice radio show is live and on location at Braemar Arena, the Bob O'Connor Tournament, the 30th annual of a legendary tournament here at Braemar Arena. And Chad Graff joins me here at the table in the main lobby. Right now, it's kind of a calm, placid environment. But I'll tell you what, once this batch of games gets over with, it'll be Armageddon.
How great is this? I'm only ever here when the Wild are practicing, and they're practicing at noon, so no one's... Fantastic. Every rink is full.
Hey, you feel the alleged ghosts of Braemar Arena in those days. I mean, it can get awfully quiet in here, but we have a great show planned. Good to see Todd Weichel just worked his way through the door. He's got the computer in hand. That means he's going to be coaching from the stands, as always. So we've got some great tournament action. By the way, if anybody's interested in following this tourney, you can go to edinatourney.com. It's cutting edge. It covers everything. It has all your scores, highlights, information. Games will be live streaming at the championship level tomorrow, and of course we bring the On the Ice radio show here today. And out of the box, of course, we heard those highlights from the Wild and Chicago Blackhawks. They continue to roll. The Devan Dubnyk story continues to pick up some steam, Chad Graff, and I think the bigger thing is we've heard a lot of questions about who's to blame for not having the goaltending situation solved and what this is. And at the end of the day, who could ever have predicted what would happen? You had a young, keyword young goaltender in Darcy Kuemper that had a very good track record coming into the season. What are you supposed to do?
Well, I mean, you look at it, not only did you have Darcy Kuemper, but Nicklas Backstrom was supposedly feeling better than he ever had. Nicklas Backstrom was, you know, the guy in training camp they were talking about as being the starter. It wasn't just the Darcy Kuemper show at that point. It wasn't all about Darcy Kuemper. Until, let's go all the way back, the first two games of the season, Darcy Kuemper posts two shutouts in two games. All of a sudden, it became Darcy Kemper's net, and when Vezina. He faltered a little bit, it was amazing. They outscored the Avalanche, who they played tonight. They outscored them 8-0 the first two games. So it was all Darcy Kuemper, and it all looked like it was going to be fine for the first time, you know, that first month in October. The Wild had goaltending stability, and that is something that they haven't had in years. So it looked like the Wild were actually going to be able to have two goalies at the beginning of the season, finish with those same two goalies. That, of course, not the case.
So the organization was ingenious for having great goaltending solutions. And suddenly, when the personal part of it, or the human part of it comes into play, now the blame game flies around. I think if you really want to say something, credit should be due to saying, hey, let's give Devan Dubnyk a shot. He's 27 years old. He's got some miles left in that engine of his, if you will. And you know what? Look at his numbers now. What is he, 15-6-2 on the season? He's posted four shutouts. Or four of them. That's a third of his NHL total. Three of them here.
Three in eight games here. I think if there's a critique that you want to make toward the Wild, toward general manager Chuck Fletcher, it's not that they entered the season with Darcy Kuemper and Nicklas Backstrom. It's that he waited so long to get Devan Dubnyk. I think it was pretty clear to us, especially, remember, Darcy Kuemper gets hurt, and then they give a few games to Nicklas Backstrom. And the last of those games was that game in Pittsburgh when he gave up seven goals, or I think he gave up six goals and then got pulled and the seventh went in. But I think it was apparent before that Nicklas Backstrom wasn't the Nicklas Backstrom that we had all gotten accustomed to seeing. So if there's a critique, I think it's that Devan Dubnyk maybe should have been here sooner than he was. Of course, since he's been here January 14th, the Wild 6-1-1.
Now, key to that, too, is, you know, he did not have a lot of work against the Chicago Blackhawks. structure-wise, defensively, all three zones, much better for the Minnesota Wild. They look a lot more urgent, and they're starting to do their jobs.
Well, that's the amazing thing. I think it shows how good the Wild can be when they get, you know, any semblance of goaltending. With Darcy Kemper and Nicholas Backstrom, it just became so easy to fault them because one or two goals goes in easy. Then the Wild's game completely changed. When the Skaters can play the type of game that they're accustomed to, and when they can play that system, it looks a whole lot better. I mean, you look at what Devan Dubnyk has done, and it's been very, very good, make no mistake. But Devan Dubnyk hasn't seen a whole lot of shots in any of these games. The Wild have been getting a lot of shots on goal. They haven't been surrendering many. It's been very impressive from Devan Dubnyk, but at the same time, the Wild Skaters deserve a lot more credit than they've been getting.
By the way, our very own David Helmer is back in the studio. He has us a soundbite that's queued up. We'll take that in a second, Dave, so get the finger ready to pull the trigger, if you will. But Matt Cook had successful sports hernia surgery. Out 5 to 6 weeks is what it's expected for him. And part of that injury, you lose penalty-killing capabilities out of him, physical game, and, of course, core leadership. Mike Yeo addressed that yesterday.
Well, you know, I think it was fortunate that we brought Karts in this year, and I've been real pleased with his game, his kind of commitment to his role. He's been a real physical player for us and a real strong penalty killer. Guy's been strong on the boards, finishing his checks, and we're going to need more of that. And quite honestly, we're going to need some other guys to pick up some slack in the physical, you know, elements of the game as far as finishing checks. And I think that's a huge part of everyone's game this time of year anyways. It's something that when we're on top of our game, it's not something that just third and fourth line guys are doing. We're going in straight lines. We're arriving on the bottom. And that helps us create more turnovers and be a tougher team to play against.
You know, first thing I noticed out of that is Mike Yeo's version of Gardy. You know, it was always the E on the end, which we all make fun of, Ploofsy, that kind of thing. It's always now it's Karts, Hards,
yeah.
Meeks.
You got to mix in a few S's at the end to keep people on their toes.
But he doesn't go with a Z. He goes with a straight S.
Karts. Suits.
Suits, yep. He's, of course, referring to Ryan Carter, who, you know, kind of a signing. If you're not following the game very closely, it's whatever, you know, White Bear Lake guy. But look at the things that he's done for this team. His point totals, Chad Graff, have been impressive. But he's been throwing in the odd tussle here and there for this club, throwing the body around when needed. And I think he has been one of the quietly more impressive pickups free agent-wise over the past couple of years.
It's amazing how quiet it was, too. He was in New Jersey. He was going through training camp with them. He wanted to be back with New Jersey, but there wasn't a roster spot for him. And Lou Lamoriello, of course, is tight with Chuck Fletcher. So Lou wanted to get him a decent spot, so he called up Chuck and said, I promise you this guy can play. He knows what he's doing. This is a little West Coast, East Coast deal, so New Jersey's not going to have to
worry about him.
Exactly. So the Wild brought him in, and they brought him in cheap. I mean, he's making less than $1 million a year, and he's providing the Wild with something that they would sorely be missing right now. I mean, he's the guy that, among the forwards, more than Kyle Brodziak, more than Matt Cook, he's the guy who's getting in the tussles. He's the guy in front of the net. I think he's been outstanding for the Wild.
And, you know, when you look at the Daryl Powes of the world and the Torrey Mitchells that were filling those roles from before, I think at the end of the day, you have a player here that's giving even more than what they did because he's got a little bit of an offensive flair.
He does. 3 goals, 10 points. Mike Yeo loves that side. He loves the bigger guys, too, on the third or fourth line that aren't afraid to get in there and mix it up. And, you know, Ryan Carter can play with skill. He's been playing with Charlie Coyle and Nino Niederreiter. So those are two guys who will get to the front of the net, too, and who will stir things up, especially when they're on their game. So Carter's not just a third or fourth line guy. He's been playing with two guys who perennially early in the season were talking top six forwards.
By the way, Mike Compton, the field producer here for us today, doing a great job working the controls. Thank you, Mike. One thing I want to point out, too, this is a two-hour edition. So one-and-done basketball show hosted by Ryan James and his crew. Marcus Fuller, of course, will also be an hour late. They'll be starting at 11 o'clock today. We're giving away a Minnesota Wild Autograph Series, Signature Series, limited edition. Jonas Brodin stick. Very nice piece of weaponry there. We have a couple of t-shirts we're going to hand out, and also we have 2 4-packs ticket giveaways to the WCHA. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to have Jim Rich from Fox 9 joining us. Mr. Commissioner, That'll be Bill Robertson to you. He'll be joining us at the bottom of the hour. He is situated in Bemidji, Minnesota with the white hot Bemidji State Beavers. Watching their most recent series. We'll be getting into that and much more. Bart Archer joins us at the top of the hour as Chad Graff makes way to the morning skate. I'm sure that's just a lot of fun.
It always is.
I mean, come on, let's be honest. When you go to those morning skates, I mean, you really, I mean, you
we know
have
who's
to,
in
I get
the lineup.
It.
We know who the starting goalie is. We're just there to babysit, make sure nobody tweaks a hammy while they're out on the ice and wrap it up and go
it's
back.
It's one more thing to be at, isn't it?
It is.
And what do you... What are you relegated to? A couple of tweets and maybe a little blog or something? What do you do with those?
Well, I got to get 700 words out of the morning skate. So somehow every morning, every game day. So we go. I got two stories a day. So I've got the game story at night. That takes care of itself. And then
you've
I've got 700 before that. So yeah,
Is that a union deal or is that a Tad Reeve
deal? That's the way it's always been. I don't know. Before me, it'll be that way. After me, it's what the other newspaper does across the river.
So it's a competing thing.
Well, yeah. So you got your notebook. So you fill up that, you know, today we'll do something with Christian Follin and how he's developing as a rookie.
Can we go there for a minute?
Sure.
I think he appeared a little over his head, and he's been out of the lineup in this latest string, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Your thoughts?
Well, that's the question. I think that with these rookies, when they're out of the lineup, wouldn't you rather see them in the AHL?
Exactly.
So the question I think today at Morning Skate is, are you going to keep him here and hope that he learns by watching the NHL, or are you going to get him in games in the AHL? And what I think has been going on is I think they've been waiting to send Matt Dumba, who, of course, is their top prospect and the exciting, you know, defenseman that everybody's watching. I think that they would like to have him in the AHL because in the AHL, he's on the top power play unit. He's on the top penalty kill unit. He's playing. I mean, when I went down there and watched him, it seemed like he never got off the ice. He was like the Ryan Suter of the Iowa Wild. So the Wild would certainly like to have Matt Dumba down there where he can progress, where he can play all these different roles. But right now, Matt Dumba's playing well with the Wild, and the Wild are winning with him in the lineup. So it's hard to take him out. So I think at some point...
He's playing better than Christian Follin was. So, I mean, you can't... I mean, it's interesting to see that maybe 2 months worth of seasoning, if you will, in the AHL has made a big difference on Matt Dumba and his progression. For Christian Follin, I just feel like he's a step slow. I see it, but I don't feel it.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point in the next week or so, they just have to decide. Either Dumba's got to be up and Follin's got to be down or vice versa. But what they've liked with Dumba is not only has he played well, but you know he can play on the second power play unit, which is something that Christian Follin can't or doesn't. So right now with Dumba on the second power play, that means you've got neither Brodin or Scandella are on either power play unit, and that frees them up. So once the power play's over, those two are out there, and all of a sudden you've got two of your best defensemen who are hitting the ice right away, who are saving all of their energy for five-on-five play, for penalty kill play. I mean, Scandella and Brodin have been absolutely outstanding this year, in my opinion.
I think a lot of people miss what those... Well, Marco Scandella's escalation has been very noted and obvious. But I was saying when Jonas Brodin was a rookie, that was Ryan Suter's first year. I felt he was the Calder winner, in my opinion, from everybody that was out there. And he was in the mix. What he finished third in the voting or
finished
whatever?
Third or fourth. But, I mean, that was the year that nobody from the West saw anybody from the East. It was the walkout shortened year. Let's just say a lot of people were very surprised and disappointed with the PHWA, which votes on it. They were disappointed that Brodin didn't have a better show.
Buried in the Midwest, buried then in the Northwest Division, that type of thing. Not an East Coast guy. We get it. The thing is, he then looked to me, to work fellow countrymen, to make a comparison. I said, this guy is Nick Lidstrom in the making here. Great size, solid NHL size, but does everything well, and it looks effortless for that young man.
It does. I think that first season, too many people sort of dismissed that by you know him just playing with Ryan Suter and everything that does, but he's shown it's much more than that. And as you mentioned, we have a Jonas Brodin signed stick right here that we'll be giving away.
Look out. Jimmy Rich coming up from Fox 9 Sports around the bend. This is On the Ice Radio Show. We're on location at Braemar Arena. The 30th Bob O'Connor Tournament, all coming up right after this. Good Saturday morning to you from Braemar Arena at the 30th annual Bob O'Connor Hockey Tournament. We've got some great stuff going on here. The On the Ice Radio Show takes it to the road. Today, coming up, we'll be giving away tickets to the WCHA Final Five. We have 2 4-packs of those. We have some fashionable ticket t-shirts. Those things are really rock solid. We have a Jonas Brodin autographed series edition stick that we're going to fire your way as well. Bart Archer is going to join us at the top of the hour. We're going to put him on the line. I think I'm going to ask him some trivia questions. And if he gets them right, the fans win a prize.
Oh, boy, you're putting the
pressure
on.
I might even do that with you in the last segment.
Oh, no, these poor fans.
And I might go youth hockey questions.
Oh, these guys are in trouble.
So we could milk the prizes for another week.
We're going to be holding on to this stick.
Absolutely,
I think we'll be taking that home.
It's going on the mantle, right? Absolutely. So we picked things up where we left off. We talked NHL hockey in the first segment, and we continue through. We'd like to remind you that this segment is presented by the Hockey Giant Superstore, located in Bloomington, Minnesota, on the corner of 494 and Lindale. You can get everything you need with your on-ice needs, and of course, they have great NHL apparel as well, licensed material there. Chad, the World Cup is coming back, formerly known as the Canada Cup, and as a longtime hockey fan, prior to when the National Hockey League brought the pros into the Olympians or into the Olympics, I felt as though that was the best case scenario you could have at the time to see the world's best from each country make it happen. Hello, Drew Otterly. Good to see you coming through the door. Bright and wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to go to work. But I think what it did is it gave us that real, true international flavor of hockey. I think it's fair to say we can rip the All-Star game. We've heard a lot of comments about that. Why do we do it? Just leave it to a skills competition, whatever. But if you rewind the tape a year ago, the greatest All-Star competition played out in Sochi.
It did. I mean, everything about that was so fun to watch. It was the pride of playing for your nation. It was just so exciting. I think the only thing that didn't work about it was that it was in the middle of the season. So this solves, you know, that problem. This tournament will be held before the season starts. It'll be held, I think, beginning of October, late September. So it's a chance for players to get back into it a little bit. I think that, you know, there'll be a bigger sense of urgency in the summer and the late months of August and early September to get going. And I think it'll be a really exciting time. I can tell you that the guys with the Wild who will be participating in it, Zach Parise, of course, Ryan Suter, possibly, you know, some of these other guys like Mikael Granlund, Jonas Brodin, Mikko Koivu. These guys are very excited about it. This is something that the players are definitely looking forward to.
Chad Graff from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, co-host here of the On the Ice radio show, and we're talking about the World Cup making its return to hockey in 2016. Is this a signal, then, that perhaps there will be no more Olympic play then, or your take?
The NHL and Gary Bettman have said no, it's not a signal in that they have not yet decided, but from what I've heard, owners were not very happy. They don't want their players going to the Olympics in the middle of a season. I think that John Tavares' injury for the New York Islanders last season, he missed the last half of that.
Debilitating.
That was a big stretch for them. They weren't very good after that. The ticket sales weren't that high. Owners do not want their players going and playing in a place where owners have, I mean, it's a business for them and they have no way of making money. For them, there's not a whole lot of incentive. And this is something that, you know, us as fans, we definitely want to see, but owners are not thrilled about players going to the Olympics. So this could be the first step in taking players away from the Olympics.
Well, and don't you think, though, at some, you know, on the bigger scheme of things, hasn't it been the Olympics that have gone on since 96 or 98, whenever it was when they started doing that? Isn't it those, though, that have really increased the brand for them and allowed people who maybe our peripheral NHL followers? The Olympics really have a huge draw from just the general sports fan. You're watching TJ Oshie pull this remarkable one-on-one with the Vezina Trophy winner and Sergei Bobrovsky in the shootout, what was it, four times, five times, yep, whatever it was. That only helps your marketing stature. So, yeah, ticket sales are impacted because Jonathan Tavares gets hurt. However, bigger scheme, I think it promoted the game. I don't think you want to lose track of that. So is that what the World Cup would do for them? However, on a smaller stage, it's not the Olympics.
I think it would, and I think owners recognize that. But to them, it's a big risk. They're not big risk takers.
Except when it comes to contracts.
Yes.
A lot of money.
They take insurance out on these guys. I mean, at some point, you know, they're trying to weigh, it's a toss-up for them. You know, if you're the St. Louis Blues owner and TJ Oshie comes back here, you're thinking, how great were the Olympics? This is terrific for us. If you're the New York Islanders owner and John Tavares comes back injured and you lose a bunch of tickets, well, It didn't work out so well for you. So it's a big risk for the owners. I think that this World Cup stage, though, will work a lot better. Even if, you know, say a guy gets hurt and he has to miss 4 weeks or something. If you miss October, I mean, the games matter the same as the ones in March. But in a sense, you know, any team would rather lose their star player in October than March.
Do we know where it's going to be hosted in 2016?
We do. It'll be in Toronto, which I think nice. Will be an awesome venue for that.
Air Canada Centre. I remember the Canada Cup that was playing out at the Forum in Montreal. Yep. Back in the day when you had Lemieux and Larry Murphy, and I can't remember Gretzky all, but that 3-on-1 just tic-tac-toe, Barry, it was incredible. Great environment. You never have to worry about tickets being sold in that venue in Toronto, so that's going to be a good thing. Now, from the Olympics perspective, all that's going to do is take on a glorified, if they're not playing in it, in my opinion, World Junior thing. I mean, to a degree.
Right.
So speaking of which, the Minnesota Wild have definitely stepped up and have tried to stake claim to which one? In 2 years, is it?
2018.
Three.
So, I mean, it's 17-18, really, because the World Juniors starts December 26th, and it goes into early January. But it's always categorized by when the trophies are given out in January. So 2017, but really 2018. And so the World Juniors goes around, and it was in Montreal and Toronto this year. The Canadians won. It's in Finland next year. And then the year after that, it goes to Toronto and Montreal once again. And then the year after that, 2018, is yet to be determined. It's going to be somewhere in the United States. They haven't exactly figured that out.
And it's never really been here.
You mean the Twin Cities?
Yeah.
It was in Minneapolis in 82, I think.
Like I said. I mean, I bet you it went on at Bloomington Ice Garden and nobody even knew it.
I don't know where it went on.
I was around that situation, and I vaguely remember that. I was probably, what, about an eighth grader in that venture or that juncture. So I think at the end of the day, it would be great for the Minnesota Wild to host this. We've seen what it looks like in all the other markets. Jim Rich, by the way, from Fox 9, was going to join us today. He Nick Lettied us again. Big-timed us.
Woof.
Big timer. So we're really taking his place on this segment, and he would be a great guy. We'll talk to him in future shows about this to really discuss what his feelings are venue-wise, fan base-wise. And, you know, you get a lot of international audience here. It'd be good for the city, too, as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. I think that's what he would tell you. This is a huge event. I mean, these are the best teenage players from around the world. These are the guys who are going to be drafted in the first round. You look at the talent that they had this year. It was just incredible watching that tournament. It's a chance for teams to watch the prospects, the guys that their team drafted in the first round, but it's also a chance. There are a lot of guys in this tournament every year who have not yet been drafted, guys who, like Connor McDavid this year, like Jack Eichel this year. These were the two captains for Canada and the U.S. These are the guys who are going to be going 1 and 2 in this year, in this upcoming draft, and who are going to be starring on teams very soon. It's a huge tournament. It's been in Minnesota, in Minneapolis in 82. 2005, it was in Grand Forks and Thief River Falls. But this is a chance for Minnesota to host this.
Forgot about that one.
And I think that Minnesota and St. Paul and the Wild have a good chance of landing this. You look at the other markets, I think Detroit has a very good case. They haven't hosted one maybe ever, I don't think. Buffalo hosted 2011. They won it this year again, but they just hosted. And then if you want to go warm weather, Arizona and Florida are both desperately trying to land this. They want, you know, their local fans. They want those warm weather fans to get it. In my opinion,
how about Los Angeles? I mean, they've been running out some players lately on the West Coast that are starting. Their youth hockey has you know, exponentially grown, and their development is being noted. And why not reward that? That's a potential too.
If there's a warm weather city that deserves it, it's the Southern California market.
Look at all the cups they've accumulated this decade.
The talent, that, and they could be adding one this year. I mean, the Ducks were my preseason pick, and I don't see a reason to sway away from that.
Boy, did you see them bend over Nashville?
I did. That was, and that was a Pekka Rinne back. I mean, that's no Nashville joke.
That was a real deal there. I mean, that was, that game made my eyebrows say, uh-oh, it's going through Anaheim this year.
Yeah, I mean, the Western Conference is so good, but I don't know if there's a team right now that's better than the Ducks. You look at the Western Conference,
can
though.
Can Bruce Boudreaux get it done? That's a fair question.
He was one of the first coaches I ever covered. I covered him in the Manchester Monarchs
like?
In the American Hockey League.
Is he a character?
He is. Absolutely. I mean, we've all seen the
he likes the
YouTube
donut,
videos.
Doesn't he?
He's had a donut or two.
He loves the donut.
Yeah, Clayton Stoner's out there now. I think that team's for real.
Clayton Stoner, that's interesting. Do the Wild miss his 12 minutes, 10 minutes?
I think they do. I think the third pairing has been a weakness. It hasn't been in the last eight games. And
he's helped them, though.
And Clayton Stoner's done well. Is that what you're saying?
He's helped them.
I mean, Clayton Stoner's playing legit minutes on maybe the best team in the NHL. So, I mean, fans were all over him when he was in Minnesota. He leaves and goes to the Ducks and signs a big contract. The Wild would have been interested in signing him, but he went for a lot more money than they were ready to give.
Love this song. That ends segment number two. We're going to bring on the commissioner of the Western Collegiate Hockey Association. That is, of course, Mr. Bill Robertson. He is on location in Bemidji, Minnesota. When we come back, we'll have him and much more coming up. The On the Ice radio show from Braemar Arena continues on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Songs that rock.
What
on
time?
The ice. We're dropping the puck, baby. Don't you feel it? Aren't you ready?
You're getting me
you
ready.
Leave this
early.
One up, David Helmer. You know, they're touring, right?
No, I didn't.
Minus Malcolm Young. How about this one? Bart Archer comes to the door. Oh, my word. He's focused and ready to go. A bevy of high school hockey knowledge. The Bastion himself. He's about as red as a stoplight right now. Mike Compton, how are you doing over here?
Not too bad, sir. How about yourself?
Good. I got to give you total props and credit here. You got this stuff set up like in about 2 minutes. Yeah. You know your gear.
Yes, sir.
Very impressive.
Mobile radio station.
Very impressive. Chad Graff, we now move our attentions over to the WCHA. David Helmer back in the studios. Is Bill Robertson online with us?
He's good to go.
He's good to go.
Bill, good morning to you. I know you're on location. Thanks for joining us here today. Obviously, we've got the On the Ice radio show from Braemar Arena. A great crowd. Games are happening on four different sheets of ice here in this wonderful facility. We have a great ticket giveaway. We're giving away 2 4-packs to the WCHA's 2015 Final Five that's playing out at the XL Energy Center. And you, my friend, Bill, are up in Bemidji. Thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you, guys. Actually, I'm on my way back from Houghton, Michigan, at Michigan Tech University.
My bad. Why did I think you were at Bemidji?
Well, Bemidji played Michigan Tech last night. That's probably what you're thinking.
There you go. So tell us about that game. What kind of a high-level contest did you have there?
Well, first of all, it was my first experience at Michigan Tech University to see their facility and to see how they put on a game. And they beat Bemidji last night by the score of 3-1 in a hard-fought game. And Michigan Tech continues to impress, in my opinion, right now, and are very, very well and should get a nice seed into the NCAA tournament. And for Bemidji, they need to keep on winning to continue to move up in the WCHA standings so they get a decent seed for potentially the first round of the tournament and then hopefully the Final Five as well.
You know, they had a terrific North Star Cup at the XL Energy Center, did this Bemidji State team. Do you think this is one of these things where they're in Houghton playing a very good Tech team? Is this a team that can turn the corner down the final stretch here and continue, or is this going to be a little tougher for them?
Well, I think Bemidji State has played the best hockey of anybody in the WCHA since the holiday season. And they can continue to do well. They're a tough team to play because they're physical. They like to dump the puck in and then chase it down and control it that way. And they're hard hitting. They don't give up a lot of bad goals overall. And I think Tom Ceratori, their head coach, who many of your listeners know from all his years working in high school and collegiate hockey, has done a marvelous job in getting into this point. And I think they're going to make a run here in the next few weeks and see what happens as they get ready for a tournament play.
How about one of Edina's favorite sons and Mel Pearson? Of course, he's running the show over at Michigan Tech, and he has turned that thing around in, what, 2-3 years. And have you been able to really learn what his formula has been?
Well, I mean, I spent some time with him yesterday. Both our head of officials, Greg Shepard, and I were in Houghton in the Upper Peninsula and talked a lot to Mel. We spoke at his Blue Line Club luncheon, and he really is a tactician when it comes to the game. He's a competitor, and I think that's what makes him so unique. But he's wonderful at recruiting in a very tough spot where he's got all sorts of other Michigan schools he's recruiting against, not only in the Big Ten area footprint, but the NCHC footprint, and of course the WCHA footprint. So for him, I think the recipe is he's been able to recruit really well, and he's been able to develop a lot of these kids. And I don't know if they're a surprise team this year. Many people don't know a lot about Michigan Tech University. They're an old WCHA school, which has a rich history with their program. But overall, he's done a marvelous job, and I think he's a coach who's on the rise.
Last time we had you on, we asked you a little bit about expansion, and you talked about Stanford and Oregon and Arizona State's rise. Is there anything new on those fronts that you can tell us about?
Well, I would say that the WCHA is still very interested in Arizona State at this point and are having conversations with the university about potentially joining the WCHA. We do know they have other options as well. So we're trying to put our best foot forward, and they're trying to figure out what's best for them. We think they'd be a perfect fit into our conference for many reasons, and they're a great name as far as collegiate sports are concerned. And I know next year when they're starting to play some non-conference games, they're going to be playing against several WCHA schools. So this has already started for them, and they're getting very serious about what they want to do. So time will tell where Arizona State ends up in what conference, but certainly the WCHA is in the mix.
We are speaking with the commissioner of the WCHA, Bill Robertson. This is the On the Ice radio show from the expansive lobby here at Braemar Arena, looking at all the historical photos of all the players that have gone on to play collegiately. And one of the topics here is the future potential expansion of the Western Collegiate Hockey Association. And, you know, for an Arizona State, Bill, there is no Pac-12 for them to go into or, quote, create, unlike what the Big Ten is trying to do. So from the perspective of you've got three teams in the top ten, maybe a fourth that's hovering to work their way in, you've got the number one team in the country. The conference is a classic conference. It's one that has name recognition. At what level do you have the ability or potential to really grow this into a super conference that the others won't be able to compete with?
Well, I think more importantly is our teams need to continue to compete at the highest levels, and we need a team to get into the Frozen Four and win it all. And I think those are the kind of things that help and make sure that the eye on college hockey is focused on the WCHA, and that's how we're going to grow it, by having our teams do very well. And this year is a wonderful season on ice for the WCHA. As you stated, we have three teams in the top eight, including the number one team in the country in Minnesota State Mankato. Michigan Tech is having a great year. Bowling Green's having a great year. And then you look at teams like Bemidji and Northern Michigan that could pop into the top 20 at any moment. So that's a good sign. And Arizona State has taken notice of that as well as other schools that are potentially looking to add Division I ice hockey to their mix and their programs.
I bet you didn't think sales were going to be part of the position, huh?
Well, I knew that we're going to have to do some building, and I think, you know, to have we have 10 teams in the WCHA, adding one team would be good. It's hard to schedule 11 teams as we have found out, so adding a 12th team would be an important piece too, but you got to get one before you get the other. So I'm not trying to get ahead of myself and just trying to look at all the options and explore all these different things for the league. But truly this job has become a sales effort too, not only with expansion but also on the revenue piece of bringing in sponsorship to the league.
As we get toward the tournament here, this is your first full season as commissioner. What is this like for you as you're watching these teams and trying to figure out seedings? What's it like heading into tournament play as commissioner?
Well, I would say this, that I was at the XL Energy Center for the North Star Cup that Pete talked about at the outset, and watched two of our teams get into the final, and I was really walking around the venue trying to get a handle and a perception and a visual on how our tournament's going to look in March. And I would say this, Chad and Pete, that I think we're going to have a great tournament. I think the fans are going to come out and support it. I think, you know, it behooves us to have teams that travel well to St. Paul and also have that youth hockey potion that will also help bring in some fans. So I'm looking for a great weekend on March 20th and 21st in St. Paul at Xcel Energy Center for the Final Five. And as I said, you know, we may have three or four teams that play in that tournament that all could make the NCAA tournament the following week. And that would be a great mark for our conference and this new WCHA.
From your read and your feel, Bill, obviously the challenge is going to be without any metro-based collegiate team. However, you've got two here that are really making a big swing in Minnesota State, Mankato at number one, and the surging Bemidji State team, provided they get through the first round and get themselves into the Final Five. What kind of challenges are you finding? And then as far as, you know, substantiating why people would go to this tournament, and then what is your feel out from the marketplace as far as interest level?
Well, there's a lot of questions there. I would say one thing for sure. We have priced the tournament for a package. You can get all three games for $69, and that's a pretty darn good value when you compare it to other college hockey events. Marketplace. So that's number one. Number two is, you know, there's a lot going on in mid-March in the Twin Cities during that time, and we're going to have to be out pounding the pavement, which is what we're doing both promotionally and then going door to door trying to sell the tournament. Now, for us, we don't have a team in the metro area, and that certainly is something that I have monitored really closely and tried to work with all the local media in the Twin Cities and using all my contacts to help spotlight our conference and to see, have people know what we're doing with three teams in the top eight and teams doing so well in attendance across our league. I want people to know who is in our conference, and that's going to be a big piece of this for us as we go forward in promoting and branding the WCHA. Is people have to know what teams are in this conference now. It certainly is not the same conference it was 5 years ago, that is for sure. We know that. So we're going to have to do our best job of putting that out there to fans of college hockey, people that have a casual interest in sports, and make it a fan-friendly, affordable event at the Xcel Energy Center. And then when we go back to Grand Rapids, make it the same exact thing next year in 2016, and then come back to Xcel in 2017. So we have to go back and forth with this tournament over the next few years and figure out what our next steps are. Certainly we'd love to have it in St. Paul long term, and that'll be something we'll be looking at.
Well, and the one thing that your staff has done, I was talking with Matt Hodson earlier, one of your information directors. What a great job you do with the media as far as getting your message out. Who are your players of the week? For me, myself personally, Michael Bitzer is a great example, the great Moorhead goaltender who was so terrific for so many years throughout the state high school hockey tournament. There are a lot of people that would lose track of a guy like that who might be playing somewhere elsewhere than their favorite college. What you've done is a great job of elevating these players who are winning these honors and letting us all know who they are so we can talk about them in passing. And I think there's an energy level to the WCHA right now that I'm personally excited for. And I think, speaking on behalf of a lot of college hockey fans, it did get splintered. And the Big Ten, for the reasons of what they needed to do, they had to do what they had to do. But it was very difficult last year specifically, Bill, in my opinion, to really get a handle on who was where and what was who. And I think right now what you've done with your organization is be able to differentiate and say, this is who we are, this is what we do, come watch us play. And that's why I think it's so important, because I think a strong WCHA is needed in the western portion of the United States, because I'm not really thinking the other two are getting it done like yours are. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I appreciate those kind words. We know we have a lot of work to do, and we're just starting to rebuild in so many ways. But at the end of the day, these coaches in the conference, these administrators and athletic directors and presidents all really care on the men's side what we're doing. and they want to make it work, and they want it to succeed. And our entire staff, with Matt Hodson and Alyssa Bennett and Greg Shepard and Samantha Stevenson, Aaron Kemp, are all trying to make it as good as we possibly can. And part of that is the responsibility of getting the word out to the masses about the conference. And we hope a lot of your listeners today and a lot of your fans that are at the Braemar Ice Arena will be coming to the WCHA Final Five, and to get that message out that this tournament is right around the corner, and we think it'll be the best fan experience that any college hockey supporter could ever have. So that's why I think it's really special, and I think that's why we're going to succeed long term.
Clubs are playing great. Bill, we're done already. 15 minutes. Hopefully we got you down the road a little bit further. Drive safe, my friend.
All right. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your Saturday, and look forward to talking to you again as we get closer to the WCHA Final Five.
Sounds good. Bill Robertson, thank you once again. The commissioner of the WCHA joins us on the ice on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. When we come back, Chad Graff and myself will promo the upcoming Wild game tonight against the dreaded Colorado Avalanche. Another tune that rocks right here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket, Mike Compton. We keep him coming, don't we? He said that's right. You know, and he's kind of a man, a few words behind the board. Dave Helmer in the studio. Can we hear him, too?
Yeah, you can
he chirp in? Dave Helmer.
What up?
How are you doing back there?
Oh, it's so warm.
Are you
hold
up the fort? Is Marcus Fuller, Ryan James, and the crew, are they waiting? Or what's going on with the one-and-done guys? Are they okay?
They'll be okay. They're here because they get to sleep in that extra hour due to us.
Oh, see, they actually, so it comes down to this. Marcus Fuller, you owe me. I guess that might not go over too well. But anyway, their show will be delayed an hour as we're going two-hour show here. Today from Braemar Arena, the On the Ice radio show, we're talking hockey, Chad Graff, St. Paul Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, Wild beat writer. On location with us, he's going to get in the car and wheel down 494 and go to one of those really entertaining morning skates. By the way, a transition game is a big name in hockey, correct?
Yes, it is.
We're transitioning right now.
Oh, that was smooth.
Look at the lobby.
That was good. Oh, wow, look at this.
Transitioning from game to game.
So what was that, a 7 o'clock game?
And the great part is we're getting completely ignored. I love it.
We're going to have to crank the volume.
It's not like people are standing in awe going, wow, look at that. That's pretty good stuff. The Wild and Colorado are playing again tonight. And, you know, it's been, what, 3-4 days for Minnesota. They have a little run of games now coming up where, who has it, 3-4 days or something like that.
3-4 days after the last 3 days.
So you feast and you famine, you know. You get to lick the wounds for a couple of days, and then you go create new ones. But is this a situation where we've seen this team win 3, 4, 5, 6 in a row, 7 of 8, 9 of 10, whatever it is, and then go through that spell again? Is this team, do you think they're going to be capable of continuing this run? I'm even saying with the time off.
Well, they can't afford not to. I mean, the crazy thing about this.
But can they?
Can they? I think they can.
What is your thought?
I think they can. I mean, what they've done. I do think they have a very good chance of winning tonight. After that, they welcome Vancouver, and these are two absolutely huge games when you look at the standings. The Wild right now are 10th in the Western Conference. Colorado, who they play tonight, is number 9, and Vancouver, who they play in a couple days, is number 8. So if you're going to move up, you got to beat the teams that are ahead of you. So this is, you know, you hate to put too much emphasis on two games in February, but these are absolutely two huge games when you look at the standings.
Well, we've talked a lot about they need help because of the numbers of teams. They were at 13 when they got out of the break, so they've elevated with these wins, which is great. Everybody's struggling that's around them, except I think that they won in Calgary. That's a big win right there. That Calgary Flame team is very, very good.
They're sneaky.
They're
good.
Young.
I mean, people don't realize how good they are. Them and Winnipeg, I think, are two teams, and we've talked a lot about Winnipeg, and I wouldn't be surprised if Winnipeg falters a little bit in the coming weeks with all the distractions they have going on there. But Calgary is a very good team. They move the puck well. They have some scorers. We all know about Johnny Hockey and Sean Monahan there. I mean, they are a very good team.
Johnny Gaudreau.
Yes, with the Hobie Baker winner, they're a very good team. L.A. is a team right now that's 12th in the Western Conference. This is where the Wild were.
Do you think that's the Daryl Sutter factor where they're wearing out on that?
I don't know. They've lost three in a row. They've lost 8 of their last 10, which is so uncharacteristic for the Kings.
But that happened in San Jose. That happened in Calgary. And here we are again in L.A. Two cups with him. Got to give him credit there. But I think at some level, they're in trouble.
I mean, look at the teams that are around the Wild. So the Wild are 10 right now. Colorado's 9. I think that the Wild are a better team than Colorado.
Colorado was in the dregs of the West. They found a nice little surge there. And, you know, I think the play of Jerome Iginla has really helped them. He's been a huge factor for them this year.
I think he's been a huge factor off the ice,
Tanga?
Too.
I'm just kidding.
Off the ice. I mean, that was such a young team. Look back to that playoff series last year. Who beat the Wild last year? It was all the young guys. It was McKinnon and O'Reilly. I mean, it was not. They didn't have that veteran presence that Iginla gives them. But they also haven't got the goaltending. I mean, Varlamov stood on his head for an entire season last season. That's how they got the number 2 seed in the Western Conference. Now here they are number 9. They may not even make the playoffs. If I had to predict the playoffs right now, I wouldn't have the Colorado Avalanche in. I think that the question for the Wild after these couple big games, I think the decision probably has to be made after this another Western Canada swing that they have, Vancouver, then Calgary, then Edmonton. That's February 16, 18, and 20. After all that, I think the Wild have to decide whether they're buyers or sellers.
We've got a hockey icon in Edina that just walked through the doors. He's putting the headsets on. I had to take this opportunity. Craig Johnson joins us. You're a Pee Wee A coach, correct?
Yes.
And how long have you done that?
19 years.
You are here to watch a nephew play, right?
Yes.
Give us a quick overview of the O'Connor tournament. You've coached in it with various teams. Of what this tournament means from a youth perspective, coaching perspective.
We're honoring probably the greatest hockey coach in the world.
Absolutely. You want out of here. He's already pulled the headsets off. That was great. Oh, this was the best part. Get out of here. Take him off. Craig Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, what do you say about 4 words? That was outstanding. This guy gives these raucous speeches in his locker room to kids, and nobody's even looking at you but your good buddy Pete Wagner, but you bail. That's outstanding. Now I know where I rate. But anyway, we digress. But back on this the Wild game, I think the thing that's been so good for them has been one and done in the defensive zone. One chance and out, one save, rebound control, goaltender moving the puck. The all five players in positions, not chasing. It's been really important, and it's allowed their transition game to work. I still am conflicted with this, Chad. They talk a lot about getting pucks deep and going to work off the end wall and doing the things that they do. I still don't believe they're built that way. I think this team is way better off the rush.
I think with Mikael Granlund out, there was a bigger emphasis on getting it deep. I mean, their second line forward at that point was Erik Haula, and I have a lot of respect for Haula and his game and what he does, but he's not as skilled as Mikael Granlund, no matter how
now
you slice
is.
It. I mean, you know, when you have the top six that the Wild currently have that are all healthy, I think this is the time that they need to emphasize skating into the zone and not just dumping it. There are lots of times that you absolutely have to dump it and you don't have another choice, but I think with Mikael Granlund back in the lineup, the Wild are 4-0. They've won four straight. I think that he's shown so much of what he brings. I mean, it's not just on the power play, which I think he's helped dramatically, but he skates into the zone. He sets it up for the defenseman. He can put it down deep if that's what it needs. I think he is a very big difference maker on this team.
How bad was Chicago on Tuesday? And then the inverse, how good was Minnesota? I mean, was that a combo package there, or was Chicago? You know, Eddie Olczyk was commenting on the broadcast that he thinks that some of their stars looked very tired from the All-Star weekend.
Do you know where they were right before they came to Minnesota?
Winnipeg.
They were in, they have this long road trip, and every year, Joel Quenneville's a big gambler. He likes to bet the horses.
They were not in Vegas.
They went to Vegas for 2 days. You wonder why Chicago looked a little sluggish?
Yeah, that was it. Chris Tierney, good to see you in the house. Wow, they're all here today.
It's a big day.
Class of 85, Edina High School. Very nice.
So, I mean, I think the Wild.
It's not really Tierney, but I mean, I went maiden. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I went with her maiden name. I forgot.
The Wild looked as good as they've looked all season against Chicago, but at the same time, I think that you have to recognize Chicago just came back from Vegas. I've never been to Vegas, but if I went to Vegas, my guess is I would be as sluggish as Chicago.
Eddie O worked some serious cover on the dish, and because he was probably there too.
I think he was. There was no mention.
He was probably leading the charges. No, he didn't say that they were up for 48 straight hours.
Oh,
no,
boy.
No, they complete. Well, so that's an absolute gift and a break for the. That's on Coach Q, as they like to call him.
And supposedly they do this every year, and usually it goes well, but holy smokes, they looked like a team that spent too much time at the casino.
Absolutely, and so the Wild pounced on that. So the question was how much of that was what they did, and will we see that against Colorado tonight?
Well, the Wild have played Colorado very well, even going back to the playoffs last season. They haven't played since the first two games of this season, and those were two games that the Wild won the first game 5-0 and the second game 3-0. Both different teams now. The Wild, of course, with a different goaltender, but I think that if Devan Dubnyk can stay anywhere near where he's been, it allows the Wild to just play that a more structured game. When Nicholas Backstrom and Darcy Kuemper were struggling, yes, they were struggling, but the Wild were playing poor in front of them. They weren't trusting their goaltender, and it just it unraveled after that. And with Devan Dubnyk in, the Wild just don't allow very many shots. It's that structured defense that we've seen under Mike Yeo that when it works, they rattle off wins like this. If Devan Dubnyk can avoid letting in the soft goals that plague Darcy Kuemper, that plague Nicholas Backstrom, I think the Wild are going to be just fine.
In and out of the zone, and that's been the key thing. It's get the puck and move it out. Now, let's go with the quick injury report. I mean, it looks like it's Justin Fontaine now. Is he the Marion Gaborik of this team with the groin? Where are we at with that one?
Justin Fontaine won't play tonight, but as soon as the Wild lose, basically, he's in. If the Wild had lost four in a row, I think he'd be in the lineup. He's healthy enough. He's skating. But Mike Yeo, when he has a lineup that continues to win, as we talked about earlier with Matt Dumba, Matt Dumba's going to play again tonight because the Wild have been winning with him in the lineup. If you're in the lineup and you get wins, you stay in the lineup.
If it's not broken, don't fix it. So really the only two players that are out is Cook with his sports hernia surgery. That's going to be 5 to 6 weeks. And then, of course, we have this issue with Fontaine.
Yeah, well, and the other one is Darcy Kuemper is slowly working his way back. So pretty soon, are we going to have a goalie controversy? Well, the Wild will have three goalies, and they'll have to find a way to balance that with Darcy Kuemper coming back.
I'd like to get back into that with you a little bit more. That was a question I was asked last week, and all I said is they said, what would you do? Mike Morris asked me this question. He said, what would you do with the three goalies? I said, well, if I were the Wild coaches, I'd be like President Obama with his ISIS plan. I don't have one. I have no idea what I would do with that situation.
That's their current plan, I'll tell you that.
Okay, so they're going with their ISIL strategy. More coming up. Bart Archer, high school hockey. Good to see Dave Terwilliger in the house right now. We'll have more coming up on the ice on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Chad, drive safe.
All right, thanks.